Folks, and welcome to VG Club. My name is Paul/Viv, aka Daxter23Jack, and today I am joined by Chris.
Hey, that's me.
Marcus, aka Cool Luck.
Yeah, huh?
Hey.
Fitting.
Grace.
Hiya.
And Javi.
What's up?
And yeah, if you didn't recognize that a huck from earlier, we are talking about the sequel to Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie.
Man, I thought that was a Goofy impression for some reason. I was like,
what? I mean, either or.
Yeah. You're pretty close.
Yeah.
Like, that was weird.
Banjo-Tooie came out 2 years after Banjo-Kazooie, and I think I was, you know, I'm not particularly familiar with Banjo-Tooie, the ins and outs of it. And one of the things that struck me pretty immediately was there's a lot of game for 2 years. I forgot that they could pump them out like that before. And I was really impressed that they didn't do that Metroid thing of, you know, stripping you of all your powers and making you earn them all back again. I was very surprised that the game just said, no, yeah, like, we're running out of buttons, but we'll make it work.
Yeah, the entire like Spiral Mountain area is just like an optional tutorial. Like you can skip it completely if you want to because you have all the same moves from Banjo-Kazooie.
It is funny you mentioned Metroid though, because I was thinking that the whole time, because there's a lot of like, I don't have the power to get this Jiggy just yet. You have to come back later.
See, I never knew when I didn't have the power, though. You know, outside of some really, like, obvious ones. Sometimes I just run around a map for, like, 15 minutes. I'm like, I'm trying. Like, nothing's happening.
I did a lot of running around the map.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's, I think I posted about this, but compared to its predecessor, I feel like Banjo-Tooie is a lot more of an adventure game. I felt like the platforming, there wasn't as much platforming. It was, sometimes it was just being like, okay, I've got this ability, I can do X, but I have to wait until I get to, the last world to get the snack pack ability or whatever, so I can go into tiny crevices. There was a bunch of that sort of stuff, and for the most part, I did enjoy it. But I can see how it could get frustrating to some folks.
I think for me, one of the issues is that, you know, this game feels like you can just feel Rare being like, yeah, we're making Donkey Kong 64, it's coming. And Banjo-Tooie was more of a preview of that than almost like a sequel of Banjo-Kazooie. And that's a little bit of part of why I was disappointed overall, just because I really like Banjo-Kazooie. But the tedium that comes with Banjo-Tooie, it's just so rough. You know, I feel like if this was made in a modern day, you could just press a button to switch to Mumbo. You could press a button to transform. You wouldn't have to like, okay, well, let me go do this. And then, all right, I got to find a pad to split out Banjo and Kazooie to do each of their things. Like it just, everything feels like they made you work for it and not in a rewarding way.
Yeah, the needing those pads to split up is the most egregious one, right? Like, just get out of the backpack. I can't believe you need to find a pad to do this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I didn't mind that one as much, but the Mumbo, like, just playing as Mumbo every time. Yeah, I had to go to Mumbo's hut just to get him so I could unlock something in the world. I was just like, I don't have any playing as Mumbo is not any fun. It's kind of a drag, and every time I would have to do it, it'd be like, oh, okay, let's get this over with so I can get back to Banjo and Kazooie.
Oh, sure. I didn't mean that, like, playing as Mumbo was fun. I just meant that, like, it makes more sense, I guess, than that Banjo and Kazooie can't separate unless you have this proprietary weird pad on the floor. But yeah, I mean, all of that stuff, like seeing something where you need to go transform, you need to run all the way across the map, change, run all the way back. And sometimes you would open up the what was blocked and then realize you have to run all the way back and untransform and then run back to the place again. You know, it was just so much backtracking.
Yeah, I think that was, what is it, Grunty Industries or whatever, the polluted factory level. I think that was the main gimmick there, because you everything was like timed, so you would have to get back and deactivate a switch to turn off like the crusher or the electromagnet, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think I got like 3 jiggies there and I just gave up on it. Like, so much of it requires either you have to have power from a later world or back and forth, timer, everything. It's just like, let's just skip this one.
Are you saying you got more jiggies from that weird, like, cuckoo clock world or whatever they called it, where it was just like a bunch of random pieces of geometry spread across a map and like, hey, our engine can't handle this, but we're doing it anyways?
I probably did. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I definitely spent more time there than Grunty Industries.
Wow. Well, more power to you. That level is really off-putting to me. I'm like, I don't want to be here any longer than I have to.
Well, that, and it's just like the enemies instead of the caves. They're like these like 2D like 2D figures that pop up, and they've got like candy canes or like large pieces of meat, and they just pop out of nowhere. So just like navigating that inside cave environment is just like, oh god. You folks know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, and you have to like split up like 2 or 3 different times to get several different jiggies and deal with those enemies every single time you split up. Yeah, it's annoying.
I spent as little time in there as possible. I think I got like the safe jiggy, and maybe one more in the inner area. But I was just perplexed. I was like, where's the other like teleport paths? I felt like there really weren't many of those in that level either. I was just so confused. I thought maybe I like my game was glitched and I just went into an unfinished level. I don't know what was happening.
That's yeah, that level, I literally got a blister because I went ahead and 100%ed the game. And in order to do that, you need to defeat Canary Mary, one of the most terrifying N64 models, I think. It's just it's very off-putting. And then, like, did any of you try that race in Cloud Cuckoo Land?
I tried it once, and I was like, oh, this is the one Paul was talking about. Because I originally thought you were talking about the mine. I was like, oh, this one's super easy. Like, I worried about your fingers, but no. That other one, I was just like, there's no way. Like, there's no way I can do this. I didn't even bother again.
I did the first one. I tried the second one once. And again, like Marcus said, it's like, nope, not doing it again.
Yeah, the rubber banding's crazy. So basically, with the second one in particular, you have to make sure you're neck and neck with her the entire race. If you get too far forward, she's just gonna pull ahead, and then she's gonna be like, ha ha, I won, you're too far behind, the race is over, I win automatically.
That's shitty design.
I didn't even like, I could never even keep up with her that first time. I don't know how you were able to be ahead of her at all.
I literally had to. I looked up methods online. On how to do it, because it's easy. So they made it harder in the Xbox version. So there was also that working against me. But basically, I had to take my nail on my index finger, and I basically had to rub it across the A and B buttons like over and over and over again. And I was able to do it. I was able to get more inputs in rather than just like tapping it. So
that's crazy. Wait, so did A and B were ones to like go?
That's the one on the N64. But like, what is it? I think it's where's an Xbox controller? I think it's Y and A on the Xbox controller, but yeah, you had to keep doing that over and over and over again. So
maybe that's why my ass is getting kicked. I felt like I was only pressing one of those.
Okay, maybe I'm remembering wrong. It has been, I think, 3 or 4 weeks since I finished up the game.
Hey, no, you're the one who did it. I'm sure you knew what was up.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, all in all, I think everybody here besides Chris has played Banjo-Kazooie, correct?
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
I played it, but I didn't beat Grunty, so I got to the final boss. Basically, played it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't ever touched it, Gray, so you're way ahead of me.
Yeah, I grew up watching my mom play Banjo Kazooie. She could never beat Grunty, so I'd watch her try that final boss like more than a couple of times.
I don't feel too bad now.
Yeah, but does anybody else have like a history with this series? I mean, like, this is kind of like the golden age of Rare when it felt like they could do nothing wrong. And I feel like it wasn't until Grabbed by the Ghoulies that things started going a little downhill for them.
Well, I always saw it as like Rare, like obviously they did Donkey Kong Country, all those games. Then we got to the N64. They knocked it out of the park with GoldenEye. Perfect Dark was pretty great, and Banjo-Kazooie was great. But then Banjo-Tooie, if I understand correctly, was kind of not as good. Like, people didn't like it anywhere near as much as the first one. Donkey Kong 64, people criticized that one a lot for way too many collectibles. And then they did Jet Force Gemini, and that was kind of like the downward spiral. I think Banjo-Tooie was probably the first game that was like, you know, trending downwards for them. The Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah, I feel like
bombed.
They still had a. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Jet Force Gemini bombed, and then they were in the middle of making Donkey. Well, they made Diddy Kong Racing also. That was a good one. I don't know where that falls in the timeline, but then they were working on Donkey Kong Racing for the GameCube. I remember I had a launch GameCube, and the back of the box had screenshots for that game. And I was like, oh, it's going to be so cool. Then Nintendo sold them to Microsoft. And yeah, then Grabbed by the Ghoulies and all that happened.
Diddy Kong Racing actually came out before Banjo. The first Banjo.
Oh, okay.
So that was what, 97?
97, yeah.
Man, they made so many games for the N64.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even though I grew up with the N64, I never played GoldenEye or Perfect Dark, so I guess maybe it's just a product of that, but I just like the first-person controls in this game. They felt so gimmicky. The analog stick was so sensitive. Like, I remember there was just like some of the challenges were like, what is it? In Grunty Industries, there's you have to go into a sewer and basically you have to shoot like 20 pieces of clunkers. Before like the entire area becomes like poisoned and you have to get out of there or else you run out of air. And that was just frustrating. That was frustrating for me. Did anybody else have problems with the first-person controls? Or
yeah, there's that challenge where you have to use the melee attack where you like stab with Kazooie's face on the dynamite in the mine in the mine shaft. I had to do that maybe 10 times in a row with that mind-numbing music, and I always got down to the final two dynamite, and I couldn't find them. It was super annoying. But yeah, like I felt like when you were trying to turn, there was just like a good amount of delay on like when you're pressing a direction and then when it starts moving. But then, like you were saying, when you're actually using the reticle and trying to aim, it's like way too sensitive. So you have to like barely move the stick to get it where you want it. Just all around, the balancing on how it reacts to your inputs felt super off. You had to compensate for it. But I've beaten the Perfect Dark on the Rare Replay Xbox release, and Perfect Dark's awesome. Like they did a great job of modernizing or bringing that to modern controls, but not so much here.
Yeah, just trying to bring the reticule just feels like you're flinging it across the screen. I got to the point where, like, when you have to be like, blue ones over 3 points, green ones are like those stupid mini games, like all those, I just started like pointing like anywhere and just shooting, figuring I'd hit something. So it actually worked out most of the time. You just kind of like literally just swing it across the screen, mash the button, and you're pretty much good to go. At least that worked. If that didn't work, I would have been a lot more upset.
Yeah, it felt like compared to the first game, there was a lot more like of those mini games.
A lot.
And I mean, the mini games weren't necessarily bad. Some of them were annoying, but not bad. But I guess part of me kind of just wanted more platforming elements.
I think that Rare, God, another game we forgot to mention that they made in the N64 era is Conker's Bad Fur Day. And I think that Rare really got excited about little mini games that they could make. In fact, like they added multiplayer to Banjo-Tooie and Conker. And the multiplayer for those games are often kind of Mario Party-esque, where it's like, we created this little mini game and we want to, I don't know, explore what we've built here. And I feel like that this game suffered from them trying to get the most out of these little games that they designed and putting them in way too many places and oftentimes making them way too difficult. But yeah.
And so many of them are just the same thing. It's just shoot things and get points. I did kind of like the kickball game, but otherwise, that one even shows up twice. So still kind of a lot of reuse.
So, am I correct in hearing what you just said, Paul, that the original game, Banjo-Kazooie, was way more of a platformer than this?
Yeah, I mean, like, I played it. I replayed Banjo-Kazooie maybe 2 years back, and it felt like there was a lot more just platforming elements, whereas there was a lot more adventure elements in this, like, or kind of like Metroid elements, where you would have to get like an upgrade to access a Jiggy or one of the other, you know, a Jinjo or something like that. And I don't know, it felt more challenging, whereas with Tui, it felt more...
time consuming.
What's that? Pardon?
Time consuming.
Yeah, time consuming. Basically, it was just, you know, it was basically you had a list of tasks to do, not like, hey, can I get from X to, X to Z?
I mean, the Rare, I think, was starting to get infatuated with the idea of context-sensitive actions. So, I mean, this game has a lot of it, but what I mean by that, I guess, is like the idea of like when you're on this pad or when you're in this form, you can do something that you can't do when you're normal. Conker's Bad Fur Day is almost entirely this. Like every little thing, you have to like find a pad, and now you can like aim and shoot, or you can jump a certain way, or turn into cheese, or whatever. So, like, this game suffers from a lot of that, and that ties into that whole... And also, they were trying to make it more of a big, seamless open world, which is an admirable and interesting idea, especially for the time, but the original Banjo-Kazooie is very traditional, level-based platformer game. Like, you would jump into levels, just like Mario 64, where you would jump into a painting. And, like, that level was a little self-contained world for you to 100%. And one big thing that was missing in Banjo-Tooie for me was like the sprinkling of those musical notes in the first game were kind of like a path to like lead you to the right areas to find the next puzzle piece. And they also gave you a sense of like, okay, I've cleared out this area. Like there's no more musical notes. So clearly I've like, this is complete. And when you, in Banjo-Tooie, it's like, you better remember what you've done or haven't done. Like, it's, you're kind of just like completely on your own to like remember, like what's left to do in an area. I found that really disorienting, and like, I don't know. Oftentimes I was like, where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to do? And is there anything left to do? I guess you can look at the totals and see like, okay, I have this out of this, of these collectibles, but it was really, really hard to keep track of what's going on in this game.
And it's not like even in Mario 64 where, you know, you can, you're being like, okay, I already have the star for this challenge, like the owl challenge and, you know, a Womp's fortress or something like that. You don't even know which ones you got. You're just like being like, okay, I think I reunited the rat and the fox. So I got a jiggy from that, meaning I've got 9 more pieces, but, you know, it's just a lot more guesswork.
I think part of what plays into that too is that, you know, it felt like in Banjo-Kazooie, you went, you did a thing, you got a jiggy for it. And sometimes it would be like you did 4 things, but they lay it out pretty clearly, like, hey, here's your list of things you need to do. In this, you would do a thing, and that would just be part one of like 5 tasks you had to do to get that jiggy. So I think that contributes to that confusion of like, am I done? Am I not? Like, what do I need to do now? Oh, I need an ability that I don't have yet. That would sometimes be the case where it's just like, okay, I guess I'm not getting that jiggy I thought I was going to be able to get to move on to the next world. And I definitely feel what Javi's saying with the notes sort of like not really marking the places you've been in Banjo-Tooie as well. Because so often, too, they're like, hey, here's a bunch of like 10 notes. Because we know you need that for moves, but like, yeah, it's no longer being used as part of the level design. And part of that to me, I think, might be because of all of the backtracking. Like, it really wouldn't tell a story, even if they had like laid it out more, not just off to the side, but like 2 areas of interest. Because it's like, yeah, you go to that area of interest, you're gonna have to come back in 3 levels anyways to actually do the thing there.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree on that front. And then Chris, I believe I cut you off earlier. What were you gonna say?
No, I mean, you guys kind of explained it there, that, you know, how Banjo-Kazooie was kind of structured, and I think I would have enjoyed that more. I think as Javi said, like it gets. I ended up just kind of wandering around. Like, what am I doing? What am I supposed to do? And like, I like, you know, 15, 20 minutes in an area or trying to go back to another area. Maybe I miss something here. And it's like, I don't get it. I don't know what I'm missing. So like it just got a little bit frustrating as I was playing it.
Yeah. I regret to say that like this was mostly a negative experience for me. I was like, this kind of sucks. Like, I don't know what to do or where to go. And like, but there were like pieces in there where I'm like, okay, now I'm platforming, or I really like that there's a ledge grab now. You didn't have that in the first one. So like shimmying along walls and like finding little nooks and crannies and stuff, that was all fun. And so like the moments in between where you're actually platforming and collecting stuff and moving stuff forward were satisfying, but those were so few and far between. There's just so much like mindlessly walking around and not knowing what you're doing or where you're going, that and also just rinsing and repeating of finding Umbo Jumbo or whatever and like doing the same thing in each level got really tedious, and knowing that you have to find a form that you need to transform into, and then you're gonna have to go, you know, to wherever that's needed, and then run back over and over again. Like all that stuff got really annoying.
Yeah, 100%. I think speaking to sort of Chris's curiosities about the first game, I think one of the main differences is that, you know, a lot of the first game, you were building up the base abilities that, you know, you start 2E with. And so things like the talent trot, when you got that in that first game, it's like, oh, wow, you know, it feels like this big progression. All of a sudden, you're able to move a lot. And then from that point on, the game, they introduce a lot more sort of little platformings you need to do with the talent trot. And it's usually a bit of, you know, it's a steep area that you couldn't go up before. It's some more of that timer things, but it's timer things where you're running with a talent trot and having to jump on platforms in order to get to wherever you're trying to go to. I felt like things like that are part of what made it feel I don't know. It made it feel much more of like, hey, you platformed to this area, good job. Or like, hey, you discovered this like little nook and cranny. You got a honeycomb piece, or not a honeycomb. What were the empty honeycombs to extend your life? Like all of those felt a lot more impactful to time rather than like, hey, you found a Minjo. Fuck you. It's like, oh, okay, well, thanks. And they never shut up. They respawn and they just come back and they're just the worst. I think it's one of those things where, you know, people always say with the sequel, we want more, more, more. And I don't think Rare really understood what people wanted more of when it came to Banjo-Tooie.
I can see how like in the development process or like when they're pitching what this game's going to be, the idea of a big open world, like there's no load screens, like every world seamlessly transitions into the next or into the hub world and all that. That sounds really cool, you know. It's like it's like Elden Ring, but like in 1999 or whatever. Which is crazy, right? Like, wow, could you even imagine a 3D platformer that's just one massive open world? But like in execution, it's really tedious and it's harder for them to like create these intricate, self-contained levels that are very satisfying and memorable. Like I found myself like thinking about like, man, remember the snow level in the first game? It's like all Christmas themed and there's presents and there's like these all these little touchstones that you remember of like the different jiggies you need to do. There's like a sledding one and there's the big snowman in the middle with the scarf circling around it. Like there's just nothing quite like that in this game. Like everything is just too big and too spread out, so nothing's designed nearly as well.
Yeah, and I mean, like, just you bringing up that snow level, I'm just, like, I can hear the music, like, in my head. It's just, like, that's such an integral part of, like, my childhood. You just evoking that, those memories, like, you know. Yeah. But with this, that's what I was gonna say. Some of the levels weren't as, I don't know, I don't want to say special, but they just didn't feel as... they weren't as memorable at all. I mean, you had the Aztec Mayhem Temple area, you had the Grunty Amusement Park, you had the Dinosaur Land, you had Cloud Cuckoo Land, and you know, there was, most of those were fine, but then there was stuff like Grunty Industries where it was just a ton of like, okay, I don't have the ability to do this right now. I should come back later. And I mean, I think I was the only one who 100%ed the game.
Oh yeah, no, yeah, I love myself.
Probably. Oh, you did? Wow.
Yeah, no. I got a blister for the Canary Mary thing, so better have 100%ed the game. No, but
enjoy your 200 gamer score for that.
I like 100%ing platformers. That's just something that I've always enjoyed doing. I love doing that with games like Jak and Daxter. So, but I just like seeing it all. I feel like it doesn't hit the highs that Banjo-Kazooie did. And in some ways, I feel like this game is a lot meaner than Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah, like, definitely.
It's very just in terms of the story. I mean, literally the game starts off with Grunty like killing bottles and like Banjo and Kazooie being like not even telling his family that he's dead, just being like, I don't want to tell him.
Yeah, at every turn, Kazooie is particularly mean and insulting and stuff, and then Banjo doesn't really care about anything, so it's just really weird. It's an odd tone.
Yep. And then
I think they were clearly flirting with what they were about to do with Conker's Bad Fur Day and make like a totally crass, rude, you know, game.
Was Conker's 1999 or
I don't know for sure, but if I had to guess, I would think that Conker is their last game on the N64, but I could check. Actually,
yeah, no, 2001.
Jet Force Gemini
yeah.
might have been. I don't know.
No, I think you're right, because Banjo-Tooie was probably 2000. So, no, yeah, that makes sense. Like, kind of the evolution leading up to that.
I can kind of identify. Sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
I can kind of identify with Banjo in this game. Like, I didn't want to do half the crap he had to do. So.
You get mad when people wake you up from naps.
That too.
Or actually, he was more sad than anything. I really felt bad waking him up. I was like, don't just stay in that backpack, buddy. The world sucks.
No, and then it's like at the end, like Grunty just kills off like two of her sisters for like no reason at all. And it's just like never brings them up again. You're just like,
I was surprised by that. I was very surprised by that. I thought it was just for the game show, but no, they're just dead now.
Yep. And then what is it? Like in the final boss battle, she literally pulls out like mustard gas at some point. And it's just like, oh, wow, she's committing war crime. No.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, something I do want to give the game credit for, because I know we've been real negative on it this whole time. I was really like impressed. So, you know how when you get to Grunty Industries, you start in that the like outside the factory and you really can't like, well, shit, like I can't get in. I like that the way you really entered the bulk of the world is through the train. It seemed to play in with the theming like really well. And so sort of like what Javi was saying, it's like, you know, there's like little bits of this game. It's like, wow, they had a really good idea here. It's a shame about all the other stuff around it.
Yeah. And, I'm trying to think what else. The transformations, how did you guys feel about them? Because just like the original, like I remember like the pumpkin Banjo or termite Banjo. I don't know. I guess those felt more useful. Whereas it's kind of like what Javi was saying earlier. It's not quite like the Mumbo Jumbo or whatever his name is. It's not like the pads, but a lot of the time, like with the dishwasher, it'd be like, okay, I can't really do anything, but I can activate really heavy switches. And I can clean clothes. Great.
And you can use the only working elevator in that whole factory.
I mean, I think the problem with those transformations is that, like, the ones from Banjo-Kazooie, yes, ultimately you are changing form so that you can open up a new path and, you know, move forward. But at least those forms had interesting, like, new gameplay. I guess the way you move around, the things you can do, it just feel different and a little bit more complex and satisfying. Because like in Banjo-Tooie, like there's nothing about being like the dynamite activation switch that's inherently like more fun to play. And like all you can do is activate the thing that you're supposed to be compatible with. Like, so in the end, it's just like a clunky, it's like padding. It's not, you know, satisfying on a gameplay level. It's just tedious, which describes a lot of the game. And it's like, really, the ultimate problem I have here is that there's just so much tedium all around, whether it's traveling or backtracking and figuring out what the hell to do.
I mean, hey, remember when you turned into a dinosaur and it still sort of just sucked? Like, it wasn't any more complex than when Mario turned into a dinosaur for, like, a half of a quarter of a level at the beginning of Odyssey. Like,
yeah, when Mario did it, it was awesome.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And instead here, they're like, well, you can be big dinosaur or little dinosaur. It's like, okay, that didn't really do much. That I just added to the tedium. You didn't really do anything interesting with the little or big versions outside of, well, the big one's strong. Like, okay, yeah, no, I got it.
And the little one can make noises, but you need to run into a random enemy to learn how to make those noises.
See, I didn't have an issue with learning that ability. It was like right there outside of the transformation area where the one you talk to, they're like, "Oh, you're a little bitch. You don't know how to make dinosaur noises." Well, here's how. It's like, "Oh, yeah, okay. You know, I was the big dinosaur first, so I sort of did that already. Like, I did big roars, and the caveman got scared." It was just this strange. Like, the game really expected me to tackle it a certain way, but because of the way the levels are designed, it's like, well, no, but I came here as Mumbo first because I saw the Mumbo thing. So I just assumed like, well, I don't want to have to come here later. Let me just go make this thing big right now as Mumbo. Mm-hmm. Without realizing it'd be a back and forth switch that the game had, because they'd never done that before.
Yeah. And it's, That's, I guess, one of the big problems I have here is that nothing is conveyed through just like the design of the world, or very few things are. Like most of the time you need to find a character that's standing nearby, or literally a bunch of signs that will tell you to cross this thing, you need to be a stone man or something, you know? And it's like, oh, well, like it would be nice if like a lot of what you're supposed to do just comes naturally or is informed like through what the world looks like, or, you know, what's around you. It just feels like bad design. Like I kept saying it when I was playing, and like, this isn't designed well. This is really poorly designed. And it makes sense, right? Like they, in the year 2000, I'm looking at Rare's releases. In the year 2000, they put out Perfect Dark, Mickey's Speedway, Banjo-Tooie, and then Conker's Bad Fur Day in 2001. Like, how do you make
Mickey's
four?
Speedway?
Yeah, Mickey's Speedway or, USA.
Oh my god, they did that game?
I guess so. It's on their list of releases.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. but yeah, that's a lot of games, and there's just no, I imagine they were stretched pretty thin, and Banjo-Tooie was probably made with a lot of spare parts that were left over from the original Banjo-Kazooie. So like, it makes sense that this was underbaked.
Yeah. In terms of underwater,
than ever, I thought.
Sure. Yeah.
Which is so strange, because yeah, I mean, like, if you're stretched thin, you would have thought they would have sort of done the bare minimum for a sequel, and yet, maybe they didn't know they were stretched thin when they took on all these projects. I don't know, because like, you know, like we've mentioned, there's definitely a lot of ideas that they had here, but they didn't have the time to really iron out those ideas. So it just feels like, well, let's just throw them all in. That'll work. And even if they don't really have anything to do with it, like you said, with the dynamite, it's like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. But then the only thing they ever did is like, you can hurt yourself, or you can trigger like basically these cutscenes. Like you can trigger these events. Okay, they could have done more with it. Like you're in a whole mine area, and yeah, the mine itself just like doesn't really seem like they really thought of what all you should be doing in there. It feels half baked for sure. Yeah.
Why would nobody like ask, wait, what's the benefit of it hurting yourself when you detonate? Like there is none, and you can't even kill yourself. If you run out of health, it just won't let you detonate again. and that means you can't kill an enemy to get more health, or even break one of those honey boxes to get more health. So you're just stuck until you can go untransform.
The death warp, which is what I had to do for a lot of this game. Just be like, okay, I'm done here. Might as well just kill myself so I can go back to the beginning of the level.
So that's actually a nice change from the first game. The first game had lives, and this one doesn't, so dying, there's not really a penalty for it, so that I appreciate
for sure. I don't know how if you played this when it originally came out on 64 at all, but you know how like with Kazooie, the note progress you made in the level, like that didn't save essentially if you died, was that a thing in Tooie?
In Tooie, oh, like when if you died, the notes would come back. I'm not sure. I think with not well, they made a lot of changes in the Rare Replay release, so I couldn't say with any certainty. So I'm not sure, but I know that in Banjo-Kazooie, if you left the level, not just if you died, if you left the level, the notes would return. So you do need to kind of like finish it before you leave, or like, you know, like for it to like preserve the progress and feel complete, you need to do that before you get out of the level.
Wait, it was even just leaving? Oh wow, I thought it was a punishment for dying. That's worse. I'm really glad they fixed that.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Javi. But I think also since they were self-contained, you can be like, okay, I can get all 10 jiggies in this world before I go to the next. Whereas with this one, sometimes you'd go to a world and be like, oh great, I got one or two jiggies. I guess that's all for now.
Yeah, totally. And I think in Kazooie, there wasn't that Metroid style, like, I need to come back here after I get a power from a different level. And maybe, I think. I think you could finish each level when you're there. Maybe I'm wrong, though. I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure you're right. I mean, there were some things like with the pumpkin banjo, for example. You could take that out outside the level, and you could get like a extra jiggy inside of Grunty's lair. But I felt like everything was pretty self-contained, so you can just, you know, you got a checklist and you can be like, okay, I'm done with the first world, let's go to Christmas Land, yada yada yada.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, like these different like amounts of openness in these platforming games, right? Because like I'm thinking, like, what, well, my favorite kind of like structure is kind of Mario 64. Although I did love Jack and Daxter 1. That one's really great. I don't remember exactly if like the levels are completely cut off from each other or if it's pretty.
No, they're all interconnected.
Open, right? Yeah, okay. Well, Jack and Daxter did a really great job of like keeping each area feeling like, you know, you understood when you were in one area versus another, and like how to like 100% each section felt a lot more natural than in Banjo-Tooie. But like I always, you know, lamented until Mario Odyssey that like Mario games like Galaxy is so contained. Like literally when you go to a level, you have to select the star you're going for, and it completely changes the level so that you can only get that star and maybe another one in certain instances. But for the most part, like you're locked into one track, you know, you're getting the star that you clicked on when you entered. And I always hated that. I hate that there's not the freedom to like truly explore the level and discover things for yourself.
Yeah, and then in that game especially, you can go back because, you know, the stars, you would jump into them and they would launch you to another planet and there would be like no way back. So sometimes if you miss, like, I don't know, a Luma that was like on the other side of a planet hidden, you would have to replay the level just to get back there so you can get the star.
Mm-hmm. So like there's just this bit wide spectrum of how platformers can be structured, and I think Banjo-Tooie is maybe the furthest into the like truly open world. I guess Jak and Daxter fits nicely next to it. But those are like two examples of like how to do it really, really well. And then for Banjo-Tooie, I think it's not so much.
Yeah, 100%. Grace and Chris, did you guys have any any positive takeaways from your experience with the game?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Pretty much. Wow. Just say no.
I full disclosure, I did not finish it. I made it about halfway through, I guess, by whatever the achievement guide that I looked on True Achievements was, and was like, I'm good. I think I've gotten what I need out of this. And it was, I think tedium came up multiple times in from you guys as a word that described the game. And that's, I was like, this is tedious, and there are other games that I could be playing that I would have more fun with. So I played enough that like, oh, I see what this is, and I'm pretty sure Banjo is not for me, but maybe Banjo-Kazooie is the one I should try, because that seems more
it's what I'd want. Definitely more enjoyable. I think you'd like it a lot more.
Grace?
Yeah, for me, it was pretty much what Javi said. Like the few moments of like actual platforming are great. The moments in between, like, not so much the part where you're running around trying to figure out what to do, but the parts in between where you're actually doing the things you need to get to Jiggies. Occasionally, those are pretty fun. But yeah, it's pretty much all the notes that we've hit. Like, the game's just confusing, like, time-consuming. It just... There are sparks of fun, but it does not hold together the entire game, unfortunately.
I have a question for y'all, and this is for everyone. Do you want Banjo to come back in the year of our Lord 2025, or whenever they'd actually be able to push one out?
Yes.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And structured how?
I don't have a preference really. If they want to try again for a big open world, but like maybe introduce like vehicles or something. But the thing that they need to solve, or that they need to get away from, is this antiquated, like very 2001 rare, like go to a pad and activate a power. All this stuff needs to be at your disposal at all times. So being able to separate, being able to like, maybe flying is a little bit too powerful, so maybe they'd have to figure something out there. But I think like having a big arsenal, like maybe you hold down a, like a Ratchet and Clank where you hold down a button and then you out of a wheel you can select your gun. Like if they have something like that where you're selecting like the boots that you're putting on Kazooie and now she can walk on like mud or whatever, something like that could be really great. I really just across the board, I think that they should take all these abilities and make them feel really, really great for the modern age. Like, I don't think the game should play exactly the same, but it should just have all the iconic abilities and they should look and feel better than they ever have. But yeah, I mean, that's really like it. They just need to make a really solid platformer that looks and feels fantastic. And then I don't really care how it's structured, honestly. It could be levels, like that might be easier to design. Or if they go fully open world, that could be cool too. But I do want to see them do this again.
Honestly, like Banjo-Kazooie, you know, it's infamous for being like one of the collectathon platformers. It aped off of Mario 64 in some way. I would like it if Banjo 3 or 4E or whatever they call it comes out. I would like to see them their take on like the Super Mario Odyssey formula, just like having a bunch of jiggies like all over this huge open world and just various different ways of how to get them. That was kind of what they were doing. That was kind of what they were doing with Banjo and Kazooie Nuts and Bolts, but without the vehicles. And I would just like to see their take on that formula, because I mean, like, while there have been good like 3D platformers that have come out in recent years, I mean, like especially in the indie space, stuff like A Hat in Time, you know, that sort of stuff. I don't think anything's really tackled the scale that Mario Odyssey has gone for, and I'd like to see a take on that.
You know, I just thought of a game that basically that same structure. I would be pretty happy if a Banjo sequel followed. Is Psychonauts 2. Psychonauts 2 has a like really great, pretty huge hub world, right? And then the levels, of course, Psychonauts is a little different. The levels are people's minds that you're jumping into that you can access throughout the hub world. But that kind of scale, right, where you have this, well, it starts out in the Psychonauts headquarters, right? So it's a pretty manageable space for you at the beginning. And then as you gain access to the forest outside and all the stuff in your... you're like expanding the size of the hub world, but then there's levels that you jump into at different points within it. I think that's a really great way to like start small, get you really familiar with your space, and then it expands. And so it feels like alive and like a real place that you're getting really familiar with. And then there's still just, you can have those touchstones, right? Where you're jumping into the snow land, or you're jumping into the fire world or whatever. And it all makes sense, and it's all connected in that way. I think that's a really great way to translate what Banjo-Tooie and what Banjo-Kazooie were trying to do and give you the best of both worlds.
I agree with Viv about Super Mario Odyssey. Like, that's kind of what I would like them to go for. Like, you jump into a world, it's big and open, you can explore it, try different things, and oh, look, you got a jiggy, like, that sort of thing. It's just like the exploration, like the sense of scale and all that. Like, I would like that without the tedium of backtracking.
what's funny to me though is that like Banjo-Kazooie, I mean personally I don't have any attachment to the lore or the characters necessarily. I think Banjo and Kazooie have like some iconography to like how they look. Like, I think that, but I think they could scrap, like, Kazooie doesn't need to be this super mean like character. Banjo could have more to him. Like, I think that just having these touchstones and almost reinventing, like a soft reboot, where like to make these characters a lot more likable. And yeah, I don't think they need to carry over the personalities that were established in these first two games, especially the second one.
If any of you are interested, there's like a fan-made trailer for like Banjo 3, not a real game, but it was just kind of like some ideas this group of people had. Honestly, I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. It kind of gave me, like, as somebody who grew up with that, it kind of gave me chills, even knowing nothing would really come from it. But yeah, I mean, all in all, I think I was more positive on this game than most of y'all. I mean, I 100% of it. So maybe, you know, it's Stockholm syndrome. I spent so much time with it, I had to like it. But the adventure game elements were a little tedious, but I don't know. It was nice playing as Banjo and Kazooie again, and the good ideas, I felt like they shined through, and the gimmicky stuff didn't last too long. So at the very least, there was that going for it.
Sure. I guess I'll give my closing thoughts on the game. I had grown up with Banjo-Kazooie, and by grown up, I mean I got it like when it came out for my birthday that year, or for Christmas that year, something like that. Just, you know, seeing it in a game magazine or on the store shelf, and it's like, hey, that's a colorful cartoon thing. I want to play that. And so I had loved that game. Never got the sequel. I rented it a few times at Blockbuster. But you know, the nature of Karth, it's like, well, I'm just sort of playing someone else's file or starting my own and not getting very far because I only have a couple hours as a kid to be able to play these games. So I was pretty excited to come back and like, all right, it's time to do it. It's time to finally do it. And something should be left in the past. And I think Banjo-Tooie is definitely one of those. It should have been just completely forgotten, because I just think it was a huge misstep for them. I felt like, you know, so oftentimes we have the first games in a series where, you know, your Assassin's Creed to Assassin's Creed 2, where here's like this really good base that like we can build off of. And I don't think they built the right structure off of it. A lot of people, you know, talk shit about Nuts and Bolts, but I did play that one. It came out or a year or two afterwards, and I enjoyed it far more than Banjo-Tooie. It was a fun game to play that said, hey, here's a challenge in front of you, figure out how to do it. And they gave you the freedom and the tools to do so, which feels like sort of an offshoot of like, hey, yeah, we want to give you a lot of freedom to explore these worlds. But what Nuts and Bolts actually delivered was that ability to tackle things from different ways and not just, okay, did you do A? Now did you do B? Now did you do C? You know, there wasn't that tedium there. So if Tooie, or if the platformer / adventure Banjo ever came back, I would want it to be something that either focuses on platforming, on actually accomplishing a challenge set forth, or something that just gives you the freedom to go nuts with a bunch of powers. But that sort of in between of like, here's a bunch of powers, but they don't do anything. It's just not for me. And I feel like that would kill the franchise entirely going forward. But I apologize to all of you, but Paul, who had to play this game, and thanks for indulging me.
No, I
apology accepted.
For me, there's no need to apologize. Like, I'm glad that you kind of like exposed me to it. And I think ultimately it reinforced that like collectathons aren't my thing. Like you guys were talking earlier about kind of, you know, the different types of, you know, 3D type platformers. And, like I'm not a huge fan of Mario 64. I think it's better than this, but like, I appreciate what it did, but like that and Super Mario Sunshine, like just didn't necessarily do it for me. And it was more like the Galaxy style which is kind of more of a traditional level based, you know, approach to things. And that's, I grew up playing, you know, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 2, 3, like they're a little more linear. It's not necessarily about collecting shit, and it's about like the challenge of the actual platforming, where, you know, Mario 64 is more about like mastering this world that they've given you in the level, finding all the shit and getting to the end of it. And I don't know, this more openness was like, this is not for me. I am glad that Marcus chose it. So I could be like, Banjo's not for me if like they do ever bring it back. And that's great. I'm glad that, like, you know, Paul, you know, Javi, you guys will probably like it. And like, this is good stuff. And I could just be like, that is a game that I can appreciate from afar that other people like, but it's not for me.
How did you feel about Odyssey, out of curiosity, Chris?
I like Odyssey. I think it's a good mix of what I like about Mario and like Sunshine. Like, it is, it's also a place where that game is like, you turn around and they're giving you moon pieces. So it's like, you never feel like you're locked in a spot. But there's plenty of like actual, like, here's a section that is specifically platforming, and you can kind of focus on that, or you can go explore, and you're always being rewarded for it. So I think Odyssey is maybe like the best mix of all that.
I do want to say that, like, so Banjo-Kazooie at its best, like the first game, and Mario 64 seem similar because they're in the same genre. But man, like mechanically, they're very different beasts. I think that, like, Mario has so much momentum where, like, you can just be shooting across a level and kicking off walls, and like, really, he's so acrobatic. Where Banjo is very binary, like, he's either moving at his specific run speed or he's standing still. He has like three specific jumps that he can do, and none of them blend into each other at all. It's like he activate the jump and it plays the animation, and then hits the ground, and then you can do a different one. Mario, it's just like such a, I don't know, like, despite them having a lot of similarities in terms of, like, you jump into a world, you collect a shiny yellow thing, and then you get out of the world and come back.
Yeah.
Just mechanically, they're such different platformers. And of course, obviously, I'm more of a Mario guy, definitely. But
I also wonder if, for me, maybe I just don't like Rare.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I like GoldenEye. I love Perfect Dark. Both those games were great at the time. I think Perfect Dark was advanced well here. But in general, like, I don't like Donkey Kong Country. I don't. Like, maybe it's just something about the way they design things that it just doesn't click with me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, playing Banjo-Tooie, I started to think the same thing, Chris. I'm like, is Rare, like, are they overrated? Like, was it because we were children and, like, this, like, juvenile humor was, like, really hitting different back then? And this, like, kind of clunky gameplay didn't bother us. I don't know, like, but yeah, I see what you mean. Because I used to, like, it used to be a no-brainer, like, Rare is the best of the best, like, Rare is like one of the top tier game developers back in the day, and like, upon revisiting it, I'm like, I don't know, I mean, maybe that's way too harsh because GoldenEye and Perfect Dark are fucking awesome. And I do like Donkey Kong Country. I give them a lot of credit for Donkey Kong Country. Like, obviously, I think Retro has taken what they've done with Donkey Kong Country and, like, made it 1,000 times better. I love the Returns games. I think those are incredible. But yeah, I don't know.
I think I might be one of the few people that actually like Jet Force Gemini.
I I'm rooting for. I'll say I root for Jet Force Gemini. I want to love Jet Force Gemini, but then I play it and I'm like,
I'm actually not sure it still holds up. Like, I played it on Rare Replay and I was like, okay, I'll come back to this later, and I haven't gone back to it. So, yeah, I do love Perfect Dark. I do love GoldenEye. First Banjo. I like Star Fox Adventures, but I haven't played that since it came out. So.
I like that game too, but it is like very, very bootleg Legend of Zelda. You know, it's just it's trying so hard to be Zelda, but it's not good at it. It's also tedious as hell, and unclear about what to do. So yeah, I mean, that's not a great game either, but I do like it as well, mostly because I like Star Fox.
Viva Pinata is pretty good.
Oh yeah.
That one I never played. I always heard great things about it, but I never played it.
I completely forgot that I did that. I forgot that was a Rare game.
Yeah. Conker sucks. Conker's a bad game.
Thank you for saying that out loud.
Yeah.
I tried playing it off the Rare Replay collection. I kind of just got bored with it after the Terminator parody.
Yeah.
But it sounds like that is Banjo-Tooie, and I went ahead and posted some of the games I was recommending for next month, or not next month, but our next session. Marcus said there was too many, so let's just go with Zone of the Enders, Bug Fable, Dishonored, and Hitman 2. Okay, don't touch Metroid Prime 2. Okay.
I put my vote in the chat. It's Hitman 2 for me.
Metroid for me.
Did I play Hitman 1 before I play Hitman 2, or does it really matter?
It doesn't really matter. There's a connecting story, but you don't really need it because
this is the reboot, right? Or the
I think it came out in 2013. The modern trilogy. Yeah.
Okay.
Not Blood Money. I think that was the original two.
I think so.
Blood Money's like the fourth game, I think. Third or fourth game.
Yeah, aren't we supposed to put two votes for two different games?
Oh, are we?
I don't know. I just did because I didn't want to try to choose.
Yeah. All right. I don't have a gift for the other one, but my other vote is Zone of the Enders because I always hear good things about it, but literally know nothing about it.
Oh, that's a wild game.
So I'm doing Metroid or Dishonored.
I think that's three votes for Dishonored.
Yeah, it's up to what Paul's votes are. So I could either put Dishonored over the top or there'd be a tie. Oh, there we go.
Whoop.
Dishonored.
Okay.
I've always meant to play this, and now I'm gonna.
Oh, you haven't played it before?
I've started it twice.
That's it. I've started it twice. This exact same. Yeah.
I think I've started it the second time. But
I love stealth as a mechanic, but I know not everybody is on the same page with me there, which is why I figured this would be a good pick, because you can go totally like aggressive and, you know, use outsider powers and kind of take out everybody like that, or you can play it non-lethally, stealth takedowns like I usually do.
I mean, I'm just so stubborn with the stealth games. Like, I have to do it perfectly, or if I get caught, I'm like, let's start over.
You can save scum in this one. That's what Dishonored is for me.
Great. Yeah, no, and then different parts of the level actually become available. Some of the levels become available if you send enemies into high alert. So like a target might go into like a bunker sort of area with high defenses if you play aggressively. Whereas if you play stealthily, you can just take him out in his bedroom.
Nice.
This on Game Pass, right? I think.
Yep.
Yeah, that's Bethesda. It should be.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. So it looks like we are playing Dishonored next time. Thank all of you for joining me today. Maybe I, even though I was the only one who enjoyed it? Anywho. Thank you so much for everything, and I hope whoever's listening to this has a wonderful day. Bye, folks. Bye, y'all.
Bye.